For the month of Damodar, we've been discussing Chapter 9, the Damodar Lila. And we kind of got stuck on a philosophical verse. It's verse number 13-14. And the Lila has gotten to the point where Mother Yashoda has a stick in her hand. Krishna was crying. She threw away the stick. And now it's at the stage of she's concerned because he's afraid he may run into the forest. And there's animals in the forest, and she's a three-year-old boy. She doesn't want him running into the forest. That's the reason given by her acharya, is why she wants to tie him to the grinding mortar. There's other presentations, but we'll hear what it says here. So, the reason this is getting a lot of attention from our acharyas, and there's references to it over and over and over and over, is it's helping us to understand in detail the divyam, or transcendental nature, of Krishna's activity and his form and his exchanges with his devotees, to prevent us from thinking it's just a nice story, like a Harry Potter story or Alice in Wonderland story, or a nice story. We're speaking about the personality of Godhead, and to take something material and put it around something spiritual, you can't do it. And the nature of Krishna's form, so we're hearing lots of things about the nature of Krishna's form. Like, the starting point is, his form is all-pervasive. One of the meanings of Vishnu is all-pervasive. So it's a contradiction that something has a form and it's all-pervasive. Form, by logic, limits something. There's a boundary. Here's how tall he is, etc. Form, this is a Mayavadi conception, frankly, that form limits. And so since Vishnu, or the Supreme, Brahman, is all-pervading, he can't have form. That's the negation idea. So it's important to understand that form doesn't mean limiting, or Vishnu includes all-pervasive. So that's where we are. I'll read the verses. The reference is Jiva Goswami's Krishna Sandarbha. That's the first one. You're familiar with the Sandarbhas, right? A little bit, Arvind? Sandarbhas. So this is Sandarbha number 4. The structure of the Sandarbhas is Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. Sambandha starts with Tattva Sandarbha, Paramatma Sandarbha, Bhagavat Sandarbha, Krishna Sandarbha. It's expanding on, of the forms of Bhagavan, Krishna is the original, the source of everything. So since he's the source of everything, everything is within him, and that's one of the teachings here. So, Canto 10, Chapter 9, Text 13-14, translation from Krishna Sandarbha. Lord Krishna, the Supreme... This is Jiva Goswami's rendering. It's not the same as BBT, Prabhupada. Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has no beginning and no end, no exterior and no interior, no front and no rear. In other words, he is all-pervading. Because he is not under the influence of the element of time, for him there is no difference between past, present, and future. He exists in his own transcendental form at all times, being absolute, beyond relativity. He is free from distinctions between cause and effect, although he is the cause and effect of everything. that unmanifested person who is beyond the perception of the senses had now appeared as a human child, and Mother Yashoda, considering him her own ordinary child, bound him to the wooden mortar with a rope. So that's scriptural evidence to say the Supreme Lord Bhagavan Krishna is all-pervasive, because it's stated directly there by Shukadeva. That the form of Sri Krishna is not material is confirmed in the following words spoken by Rukmini to Lord Krishna. This is her letter to Krishna, Canto 10, Chapter 60. Quote, "A man within this material world is just a dead body." No offense to men, but in fact, superficially, the living entity is covered by this body, which is nothing but a bag of skin decorated with beards and mustaches, hairs on the body, nails on the fingers, and hairs on the head. Within this decorated bag, there are bunches of muscles, bundles of bones, and pools of blood, always mixed up with stool, urine, mucus, bile, and polluted air, and enjoyed by different kinds of insects and germs. Lovely. A foolish woman accepts such a dead body as her husband, and in sheer misunderstanding loves him as her dear companion. This is only possible because such a woman has never tasted the ever-blissful flavor of your lotus feet. She hasn't even met him yet, but she's clear about his transcendental position. Next is a reference to the section of the Bhagavatam. This is an important, this philosophical section of Damodar Lila is, makes its way into illuminating many other parts of the Bhagavatam. So this is 82. Krishna says, "Dear ladies, I, just as the elements of ether, water, earth, air, and fire are the beginning and end of all material objects and exist both within and without them." That's the verse, and then Jiva Goswami's commentary on that verse starts with a question. Why is prema the cause of attaining you? Answer, because I am the shelter of everything. I alone am suitable for prema, and prema is suitable for to attain me. Two verses explain this. The meaning is that very quickly you will attain me eternally. That's from 8, chapter 82. Jiva Goswami writes, there is a similar statement in the Damodar pastimes. Na chantar na bahir yasya. That's 10.9.13. The Supreme Lord has no beginning and no end. Certainly, endowed with my beautiful form, I am the cause, Adi, and the place of dissolution, Antaha. I am spread in the middle, Antaram. I am spread throughout you, and remain there. Actually, separation does not exist. Interesting commentary to Krishna. It's commentary to Krishna speaking to the residents, those who had came to see him in Kurukshetra. So he's speaking what his position is. So it's theism, monotheism. Says, all monotheistic religions say the same thing. There's God is the source of everything. How that is so is not so clearly understood. There's different degrees of understanding. I just came across a really interesting, actually it was twice, recently. One was from Yasovati Nandan's recent passing. He was narrating this. It was in the memories that it was recorded of him speaking. Basu Ghosh was there for a similar exchange. The devotees were with Prabhupada. It was a room conversation. And they were discussing different theologies. And there was a question that was placed before Prabhupada. Which is better, the demigod worship of Hinduism, or the followers of the Vedas, and monotheism from other religions? And they were both very surprised at Prabhupada's answer. He said, better between the two is the worship of demigods, because the monotheism of the West, it's all distorted and not properly understood. The principle of there's one source of everything, it's obviously that's superior. But if one properly follows the standards of their administrative authorities, like exactly what the Vedas say, and their administrating affairs, like Krishna speaks in Bhagavad Gita, they're dispensing things that are the needs of people in the creation, and honoring them and acknowledging them, like Nanda Maharaj did when he was ready to perform the Indra Yajna. Or something that comes earlier is the occasion of Nanda Maharaj being swallowed by the serpent. You know that's pastime, right? The Nanda Maharaj being swallowed by a serpent. No, not Agasura. This is Nanda Maharaj. So the situation is, it's in the much later in Krishna's pastimes. So it was Shivaratri. And the residents of Vrindavan, headed by Nanda, went some distance away to a place where there was a Shiva temple to honor Shivaratri for a three-day festival. I'm making reference to that because the Vrijvasis, they did those things. Indra Yajna, Shivaratri, and so forth. Now, Nanda was a worshipper of Narayan. Their Ishtadev, he and Yasoda, their worshipable deity was Narayan. Even as worshippers of Narayan, they observe these different festivals. Now, how did they see Lord Shiva and how did they see Indra? Different than how people today might see Lord Shiva and Indra, it's another thing. And just the emphasis, there's one source of everything. Certainly that's what the Vedas state, the Vedanta states. And again, the Bhagavatam in this section is helping us understand that. While there's one source of everything, it's also important to understand how everything is connected to that source. And the Vedic picture is much clearer about how everything is connected to the source. And the dispensing of necessities of life comes from the devatas, but the devatas are connected to the source of everything. It's just part of the big governmental structure of the universe. The picture is more clear. Anyway, similar to what is said in this chapter 9, verses 13-14, it's spoken by Krishna in Kurukshetra. He's the source of all the elements, as the elements are within everything and outside of everything. Krishna similarly is inside everything and outside of everything. Radha? Listen. Okay, so we're going on at the same place, same chapter. No, same place. At Kurukshetra, two chapters later, there's sages giving teachings. Sages giving teachings at Kurukshetra, which says, the Supreme Lord's awareness is never disturbed by time, never disturbed by the creation and destruction of the universe, nor by changes in its own qualities or by anything else, whether self-caused or external. But although the consciousness of the Lord, who is the Supreme One without a second, is never affected by material distress, by the reactions of material work, or by the constant flow of nature's modes, ordinary persons nonetheless think that the Lord is covered by his own creations of prana and other material elements, just as one may think that the sun is covered by clouds, snow, or an eclipse. This is the discussion is to understand the nature of Krishna's form. So the sages here are speaking about it, just as Shukadeva is speaking about it in chapter 9. And Jiva Goswami, is going to make reference to chapter 9 to help us understand this, the teaching of the sages. Okay. Awareness and manifesting power, anubhutihi, manifesting power of the Lord as the doer and the object of action, are not destroyed by creation and destruction of the universe. So his position is independent of the universe, including time, which destroys the universe, but he's not destroyed by time. By itself, like lightning which appears and disappears. Paramarupa? It's a small space. Okay. Maybe you should come sit over here. Is that all right? Do you mind? Come sit over here. Both of you. Because you're right by the door and don't sit right there. Don't sit right there. Sit over here. Sit over here. The lightning. Lightning, according to what Jiva Goswami is writing, lightning appears and disappears on its own. Now, where does lightning come from if it appears and disappears on its own? What's lightning anyways? Lightning is an energy. It's fire. And fire, the fire of lightning is caused by friction of the wind. Prabhupada explains like this. When wind comes together, this wind, that wind, and it collides, it from the air, the fire energy that's stored comes out. And then it's dissipated. So the whole point here is Krishna's awareness is not reliant and not affected by any material change. That's the main point. It's not, it's swarat. You know that word? Radha? Swarat. It's self-independent. Krishna is swarat. His knowing things and his doing things and his having potencies, it's not caused by some, it's not the effect of some other cause. It's coming from himself. He's changeless by his very nature, and yet he appears sometimes as a small child, because that's the topic, sometimes as a small child, sometimes in a forearm form, sometimes and sometimes. And there's no material causation. Like I'm mentioning one of your favorite words and asking questions is why. And for Krishna, he doesn't need a why. That's the point. He's beyond cause and effect. He's causeless. And still he does things, and he does things from his own potencies that according to his desire, sometimes and sometimes. His awareness and powers are eternally existent. That's the point. His awareness, his cognizance, and his powers, there's no cause of them and therefore something, but they're eternally existing without limit. The next verse states the opposite condition of the Lord. What's that? Krishna is without a second, advatiyam, since he alone is Swayam Bhagavan. The descriptive terms are in order of increasing excellence. Yet, ordinary people think he is covered by material energies, and he suffers because of suffering in their associates. In other words, because they suffer, they think Krishna is similar to themselves, since everyone thinks in terms of themselves. For example, the sun is king of the planets, but it seems to be covered during eclipse by Rahu. The Lord's powers are never affected, since he does not suffer like the persons present at that place, material persons that they're considering Krishna. They're suffering, so he must be suffering like their suffering. Rather, he is completely independent. What's the word for independent again? Svarat. Very good. You were paying attention. Good. Because his knowledge is dependent on himself. He is Krishna, without comparison. Advatiyam. Because he alone manifest everything else. Another person thinks the Lord has limited knowledge because of his vibhava or various forms and because of his senses powered by prana or his limbs. Just as the sun seems to be covered by clouds, snow, or an eclipse. But the sun isn't covered by any of those things. It's perception of the object interfering. The interferences are blocking our understanding of the object. It's not the sun is covered. Our perception is covered. The meaning is this. The sun appears to be limited in form by clouds or an eclipse. That is suitable since a cloud is the transformation of vapors of water pulled up by the rays of the sun. Snow is a conglomeration of particles of water pulled up by the sun. Rahu the cause of the eclipse is the form of darkness which is dependent on the sun. The Lord's eyes and other senses are not like that, but are part of his swarup, his spiritual form. Therefore, these senses and limbs cannot cover the Lord's knowledge. Similarly, the sun cannot be covered by warmth, etc., produced from his swarup. Rather, the sun is revealed by them. Krishna's swarup. Swarup means spiritual form. Krishna's swarup is not covered by time or place, and his knowledge is not covered, since his eyes and limbs are also similar to his swarup. However, low people will think the opposite. It is therefore said, Na chantar na bahir yasya. That's the verse that we've been speaking about for 6 or 7 classes. Chapter 9, text 13. He has no interior or exterior. So in case you are wondering what is the meaning, by now we should have some idea of what the meaning is. Now, antar means within, and bahir means out, within, without. Like vihir nishingo, hridaye nishingo, like Lord Nishingadev. He's within and without. He's within and the out, but he has no in and out. He's all pervasive, although he has form. So these seemingly, if it's this, it can't be that, and if it's that, it can't be this, seeming contradiction. This is the theme we've been dealing with. It's all adjusted based upon Krishna is Swarat, he's the original source of everything, and his potencies are without limit, and sometimes he exhibits his potencies this way and withdraws them, and sometimes that way and withdraws them. And there's no prompt that says, why did he do that? And why did he do this? He is enjoying, and his enjoyment is the enjoyment of his beloved devotees. So he's just having relationships and rasa with his beloved devotees, because he's the enjoyer of rasa. That's just who he is. Here's a reference now. There's 4 verses in a row from Canto 3, Chapter 9. This is Brahma's praying to the Supreme Lord for creative potency. Canto 3, Chapter 9. The universe hasn't been built yet. He's praying to the Supreme Lord for the potency to do that service for him. So he says to Krishna, Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is the cause of all causes. He is past, present, and future. And he is movable and immovable. Those who are destined to be dispatched to the path of hell neglect your personal form because of speculating on material topics. Oh, Master, you do not give up the lotus hearts of your devotees who smell through their ears. We okay? We're what? Yeah. We saved a space up there. Did you catch that? Smelling through your ears? We'll say it again. Smelling through your ears? Krishna can do that, right? Angani yasya sakalendri vritti. All his senses are interchangeable with others. But he can enable the devotees to do the same, because the main process of understanding things, not through the senses, but through sound, which comes through the ear, because it's the most important of the senses. But here back to Brahma's Prayers for Creative Energy, Canto 3, Chapter 9. Krishna is past, present, and future, the cause of all causes, the movable and the immovable, those who are destined to be dispatched to the hell, to the path of hell. Neglect your personal form because of speculating on material topics, O Master. You do not give up the lotus hearts of your devotees who smell through their ears the fragrance of your lotus bud feet, brought by the wind of the Vedas, and take your lotus feet as the greatest treasure through prema bhakti. That's a nice translation. And now we're going to go to Dwarka. Krishna's in Dwarka, and Shukadeva Goswami speaks glorification of Krishna's form in Dwarka. You know that obviously he has 16,108 Krishna forms, but it's one Krishna, which is a contradiction. But for him it's not. So Shukadeva Goswami says, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, whose foot dust cannot even be seen by yogis in samadhi. This is a reference to chapter 12. Chapter 12 of Canto 10 is the childhood pastimes of Krishna. He's with the cowherd boys and they're going out with the calves. He's still 5 years old. And the description of what the cowherd boys do together is really fun. Radha would love it. They're having fun. Fun, fun, fun. Maybe one day you'll become a cowherd boy and have fun. She likes having fun. Austerities, I don't know, but she likes having fun. So after describing the playful activities of the cowherd boys, Shukadeva Goswami is extolling the virtues of the cowherd boys. And then all the residents of Vrindavan with this verse. Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, whose foot dust cannot even be seen by yogis in samadhi, who have controlled their minds by severe hardship for many births, is eternally situated here in Vrindavan, directly visible to the eyes of the people of Vraja. Oh! How can the good fortune of the people of Vraja be described? He has a human form. This is the emphasis this section is. He has a human-looking form, but it's not human, it's fully transcendental. Oh, look at this. Here comes our verse from chapter 9. Na chantar nabahir yasya. There we go again. Na purvam napi chaparam. The Supreme Lord has no beginning and no end. That's got to be a spiritual form. No exterior and no interior. Spiritual form. No front and no rear. In other words, he is all-pervading. Then comes a verse similar. It's Brahma's prayer to Krishna, chapter 14. Oh, worshipable Lord, I offer my obeisances to you. To attain you, O son of Nanda, with a body, the complexion of a rain cloud, with cloth flashing like lightning, with face shining among peacock feathers and gunja berry decoration, with colorful forest garland, with beauty enhanced by yogurt, rice, stick, horn, and flute, and with feet so soft. Very nice verse. This is Shukadev speaking, chapter 12. If, even only once, or even by force one brings the form of the Lord into one's mind, Krishna awards himself as the goal. Residing within, he gives the jivas the experience of bliss by destroying all maya completely. What more can be said? Now this is spoken in relation to the killing of Agasura, because he just killed Agasura, and Agasura's maya is gone. So Agasura was fixed on wanting to kill Krishna. In his consciousness, his mind was fixed on the form of Krishna. And he got freed from maya by that meditation, by Krishna also. Touch of Krishna, he touched his inside his mouth. Same thing happened with Bakasura. He allowed himself to go into the mouth of Baka. He couldn't swallow him, but he became purified by touch of Krishna. It's very specifically described by our acharyas in that way. But even before that, their Baka and Agasura, who are brothers, their mind was fixed on Krishna. And they became freed from worldly contamination. And ultimately, even their whole material existence, they achieve liberation. Brahma's words again, chapter 14. How greatly fortunate are Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd men, and all the other inhabitants of Brajabhumi. There is no limit to their good fortune because Krishna gave them prema, which is the highest bliss, eternal and complete. The highest bliss, eternal and complete. Prema. And it specifically said Krishna bestowed it upon them. We had some discussion about, is there something that you need to do? Or do you just, since it's mercy, do we just wait for mercy? The whole of the Damodar Leela is, both are required. There are things that we do, but that's not sufficient. We don't just wait for mercy. We demonstrate to Krishna that we want to serve him, please him, be connected to him in that mood of love and service. But prema is something he bestows or doesn't. It's from his side. That's the mercy part. Next, the human form of Krishna is being described. Here's from Brahmanda Purana. Nanda, Vraja, Jananandi, Satchit Ananda Vigraha. Or Krishna's form is eternity, knowledge and bliss, and gives bliss to the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Again, on Krishna's form, Nityo Nityanam, Chaitanas Chaitananam, we all know this one. Eko Bahunam Yobididadi Kaman, but the second part of it ends differently. Jiva Goswami's translation, the Brahmanas who worship as he stands on his altar, the one who is greatest among the eternals and greatest among the conscious persons, who fulfills the desires of many, they and not others attain eternal perfection. And I think we'll end with this following reference. This is prayers by Vasudeva and Devaki to Krishna within the prison house after he appears, and then Krishna speaks to them some words revealing his divinity. Obviously he's there with his forearms, but and they've also said in their prayers they understand. So he speaks and he's about to assume his childlike form, but here's that verse. After thus speaking, the Lord remains silent. While they alone watched, by his mercy he suddenly assumed the form of a baby who was Swabhava Siddha. Swabhava Siddha. That will be explained. Commentary. Then what happened? After saying this, iti, preparing to withdraw and hide his forearm form, the Lord became silent while his parents watched. Without others being given this opportunity, Bhagavan, endowed with six opulences, by his own shakti of knowledge, atmamaya, by his shakti of excellent intelligence, he became a normal child. So now there's a whole discussion about what atmamaya means. He's going to give some dictionary, four or five different dictionary explicit definitions, and then summarize what atmamaya means. Our common understanding is by his own potency, atmamaya. But he gets into it as for his scholarly audience. According to Trikanda Shesha, a certain dictionary reference, maya means illusion, or maya can also mean intelligence. According to another dictionary source, maya means knowledge. Or, according to Mahasamhita, it can mean desire. Like, quote, maya means desire or matter made of gunas without consciousness. According to Vishvakosha dictionary, maya means deceit or mercy. Summary. By my desire, by my mercy, I manifested the state of a baby. So those are details and details. What does atmamaya mean? Same as what we just, this long thing we just heard. It doesn't come from any other source. Not prompted by anything. It's not, you know, what's the cause of Krishna's doing anything? It's not, there's no other cause. Every other activity has a cause. It's the effect of some cause. And for Krishna, there's no cause. He's beyond cause and effect. So by my mercy, atmamaya. By my desire, atmamaya, I manifested the state of a baby, same as the forearm form that he manifested. He explained why he did that. Somebody was asking me recently, was reading this section very carefully. There's no mention in the Bhagavatam of Krishna's asking, we commonly say it, Krishna said, or they said, please assume a childlike form. So then he assumed a childlike. There's no dialogue that says that. Nothing in the Bhagavatam that says that, although we commonly say it, right? I've said it so many times. Devaki said, please assume a childlike form. Because if Kamsa hears that my eighth child, has now appeared, he's going to come and try to kill you. So assume a childlike form and we can hide you better. But, you know, he's Vishnu. She's very clear. He's the Supreme Lord. So there's no dialogue in the Bhagavatam that says that explicitly. Read it carefully. Even in the commentary, it doesn't say it explicitly. But it's stated elsewhere, and therefore it's part of our narration of that pastime. But here we're getting like an inside picture of atmamaya. It's based upon his desire. In other words, in other Puranas, Devaki says, the Bhagavat Purana, Devaki doesn't say. So it's part of our narration, because it's accepted by our acharyas. It's in other Puranas, although it's not in Bhagavat Purana. And why did Devaki say? Devaki said what she said, because atmamaya, by his desire, she said, he did. She didn't have to say he can do. She can say and then he does. His doing is not just because she says. Everything is the point is, everything's happening by his internal potency. like that, you know, the Damodar leaf that we've been discussing. It's really clear. Krishna had a desire. He wanted that affection of Mother Yashoda in the form of scolding. So he did some things so that she would do that. He was satisfied. When she went to get the milk from the stove, he was angry. That was, but if he's angry, why is he angry? Because, you know, rationally, he wanted her to do what she's doing. She did what she did. Now he's angry. You know, it's just contrary. You know, fickle Krishna, unstable Krishna. But it's a loving exchange. He's enjoying that emotion of being angry and breaking the butter pot and going and stealing butter. And he sees her coming and he runs and she catches him and he starts to cry and she throws away the stick and she tries to bind if she can't. It's all Atma Maya. But it's not like actors on a stage where they have a script and, okay, Krishna's got his part to play. Mother Yashoda's got her stick, so he's supposed to cry now. So he cries because that's what the script says. And she throws away the stick because that's what the script says. And she wants to bind him because that's what it's not like that. It's all another dimension of internal potency, and the flow of events of internal potency is Rupa Goswami's teachings. How are we doing? You with me? Rupa Goswami's teachings are the spiritual world is bhakti rasa. It's what it is. And so bhakti rasa it's an ocean of rasa, rasa amrita sindhu, and there's waves in the ocean. The ocean is an ocean of rasa, and there's waves. And the waves move this way, and the waves move that way. And why do the waves move this way, that way? You know, you can get out your laws of physics and why do waves move. In the spiritual world, the law is Atmamaya. It's Krishna's pleasure potency acting so he can enjoy, and his enjoyment is the pleasure of his devotees. His enjoyment is the pleasure of his devotees. So he's reciprocating with the love of Mother Yashoda. He's reciprocating with the monkeys. There's a nice description, by the way, by one poet commentator who says the reason that Krishna was so involved with monkeys, I mean, there's not just monkeys in Vrindavan, there's all kinds of other peacocks, of course, but all kinds of birds and all kinds of animals. But why so much focus on monkeys? This poet says Krishna felt very indebted to the service the vanaras performed. He received service from them, and he wanted to do some service and enjoy loving exchanges with them. So feeding the monkeys. You know, it's said in Sanskrit in a very beautiful way. But so back to the theme, Atmamaya. It's Krishna's enjoying, through his potencies, reciprocating with the love of living entities for him. And those that don't love him, he reciprocates with them according to how they regard him. And it's not his partiality, it's just reciprocating with their regard for him. But those that have love for him, it's a very special kind of loving exchange. So back to our chapter 9, text 14, reads, thus the Lord manifested the form of a baby. No, the Lord manifested the form of a baby. That's back to Canto 10, chapter 3, from the forearm form to the baby form. Krishna manifested the form of a baby who was Swabhava Siddha, which means perfect, by his very nature. In the statement from chapter 9, Yashoda bound Krishna as if he were an ordinary child, it says the same. Babandha prakritam yata. So Krishna is shown to be non-material by comparing him to a material child. Do it again. It's a metaphor. When you say yata tata, it's a metaphor. As this, so that. So he's being compared to something that he's not. It like something that he's not. He's like that. So his form is not material. That's the logic. Last sentence, last little paragraph. Krishna, revealing his desired pastimes, is always the abode of all Shaktis. By those Shaktis he shows pastimes desired by his devotees. To accomplish this, they should all be qualified. Thus, they are all Swabhava Siddha. So that Swabhava Siddha goes back, if you don't mind, I'm going to go back to this verse that was spoken by Shukadeva Goswami, saying that Krishna spoke, he paused right before their eyes, voila. He transformed the forearm form into his baby form, who was Swabhava Siddha. The baby form was Swabhava Siddha. So that when is that Swabhava Siddha? He's spending a lot of time to help us understand. Swabhava Siddha is a perfection that comes from within himself. Swabhava Siddha. Swabhava. Sanskrit's a nice language. Swabhava has a material feature and it has a spiritual feature. We hear the word Swabhava in chapter 18 of Bhagavad Gita in relation to the four varnas. Brahma karma Swabhava jam, Kshatriya karma Swabhava jam, etc. Vaishya karma Swabhava. Means arising from one's own nature, Swabhava. But those four are connected to the modes of nature. For Krishna, there's no modes of nature. So when Krishna does something, it's arising from his Swabhava. When he showed that baby form, that's his Swabhava. The final point here is, to be able to experience Krishna, one has to be qualified, and therefore the devotees are also Swabhava Siddha. They can do things, and it's just explained, you know, tomorrow morning. They can manifest, I'll tell you a little sneak preview of tomorrow. It is said that when Krishna married, There was the eight gopis, eight queens that he married first, but then there were 16,100. Those were the princesses, right? The marriage of the princesses was simultaneous. And it says in the verse from Canto 10 that Devaki was present personally in each one of the simultaneous marriages. So what that means is not only Krishna manifested 16,100 forms of himself, Devaki also. Pretty mysterious, huh? But, there's a nice section of Brihat Bhagavatamrita we don't want to have a problem, right? Good. So, in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, Gopal Kumar is traveling here and there, and he gets to a place where Narada and Uddhava are. He gets to Dwarka, and they want him. Uddhava and Narada, they feel you're more qualified than we are because you have a spontaneous natural attraction for Krishna in the way that you have as a Brijvasi that we don't have. You're more exalted than us. We're not qualified like you. And Gopal Kumar says, I keep seeing you in different places, Narada. You're here, and you're there, and you're here, and you're there. And Narada says, maybe you don't remember, but I already explained this to you. Those of us who are serving Krishna, we can manifest ourselves, or Krishna arranges for us to manifest multiple forms of us. You know, it's startling. It's a big puzzle. Because how does it, Krishna expanding himself, he's Krishna. What about a jiva? How does a jiva expand himself? Swabhava siddha. Or here's another one. Giriraj Maharaj, I read it after, I heard it in a morning walk conversation, then I went back and read, like, I wanted to get the detail. Giriraj Maharaj asked a very logical question, and Prabhupada gave an astounding answer. He said, Krishna's pastimes are eternally going on, and that means as he leaves this universe, he enters another universe, and those same pastimes are going on. So, when Krishna appears in this universe, Arjuna is with him. But then he goes to another universe, and does Arjuna expand? Is Arjuna present with Krishna simultaneously in multiple universes, doing different things and to assist in Krishna's pastime? And Prabhupada's answer was yes. I mean, I found that I had to read it multiple times. So there's no explanation of technology, how that happens. Jivas expand, or the multiple forms of those jivas. When Krishna showed the calves and the cowherd boys that were in the exact likeness of the calves and the cowherd boys, that's one thing, because Krishna's Krishna and he can do that. But what about how many cowherd boys are identical cowherd boys, or identical Arjunas, or identical Devakis, or what's Swabhava Siddha for the devotees? They're very qualified. We should understand they're very qualified. And because of their qualification, they can experience things in relation to Krishna that unqualified people can't experience. It's like we're sitting here hearing Krishna's pastimes and the description from our acharyas about Krishna's pastimes. And it's very nice. But we're not experiencing the same thing that, let's say, the six Goswamis were experiencing when they would sit together and discuss Krishna Katha. Like that question that came at the end of the morning class of someone asking, it's all theoretical to me. When is that time going to come? What's the procedure to get there? Where it's not just conceptual or notional, but there's some actual experience. It takes purification, it takes qualification to get that experience. We have to be faithful, and we have to be patient, and we have to sometimes do things that I'm looking at Radha again. We have to sometimes do things that's maybe not like we want to do because it seems fun or something like that. We do it because we know it's wholesome and it's part of what's going to purify my existence. And therefore, that's motive goodness, by the way. Just it's going to purify my existence. I'm not at the spontaneous stage yet, but I know that this will, I have faith that this will take me to that qualified stage. And then I can experience a happiness, a jubilation. A jubilation just by being in contact with Krishna through sound vibration. The language we heard, newer and newer experience. Although hearing the same pastime again and again, newer and newer experience because Krishna is unlimited. So it's a gradual process of cleansing and becoming again attracted to our natural position in relation to Krishna. To be continued tomorrow. And we will finish this section eventually. We'll move back to the past times. But it's a very important section. One of those questions that has come up several times that we started, why is there such emphasis given to this Damodar pastime? They spent the whole month on the Damodar pastime. And one of the explanations I've been thinking of is the commentary is the longest commentary of any chapter I've come across so far. It's like it's many, many pages. Because it's important. And what's important about it is not just the Leela, but churning the topic of the Leela so we can understand really what's going on. You know, Krishna Tattva. Janma karma chame divyam evam yoveti tattvataha. To understand in truth. There's details and details of that truth of Krishna that's being revealed in the pastime, and especially through our acharyas, the commentary is abundant. There's another chapter that has a lot of commentary. During the Thanksgiving holiday, this is coming attractions. When it hasn't been COVID time, for some number of years, I've been conducting a seminar during the Thanksgiving holiday because it's a holiday, so people can participate. Now, with COVID, it's not going to be face-to-face. It's going to be like this. But you know, we'll still follow extra classes because it's holiday. So the focus is going to be on the Putana pastime. So one of the home visits in the Washington area, a young girl, maybe your age, really smart, you know, alert. I asked her, "What's your favorite pastime?" She, no hesitation, Putana. I said, "Guess what? We're going to be speaking about the Thanksgiving holiday." And then her mom said, and she likes to write. I said, "Okay, why don't you write something? And during the seminar, I'll read what you wrote, a nice poem about the Putana pastime." This absorption, whatever faculty Krishna has given you, like playing the violin or writing a poem or, you know, getting lost with technology or, you know, whatever. Whatever you have as an ability to offer to Krishna, we offer that to Krishna so that the glorification of Krishna can be spread here and there. So the Putana pastime has a lot of commentary also. But I don't think there's a section that goes to the extent that we've been doing with these verses 13, 14 about the form of Krishna. But it's really important, Krishna Tattva. So there's a lot to describe it. And my experience is by hearing it again and again, the picture becomes clearer. The way that our acharyas explain, of course, is for different audiences than, you know, COVID-19, 2020. But the essence is there. And to appreciate the essence, it helps to hear again and again to make sure we've understood the nature of Krishna's childhood form. That's the object of Mother Jasoda's affection. And he's reciprocating as a small child, crying, running away, being naughty. Okay, so let's see if there's some discussion. Radha's got her hand up first. Do you have something?
I have a number of questions, but I...
Go ahead.
So we hear about Swarup and Swabhav. When we talk about Swarup, that refers to the constitutional form of the living entity. And today we are hearing about Swabhav Siddhi, which is, constitutional nature of the living entity and perfection of it. That's what I'm learning. So typically when we have heard about Swabhav and Swarup, at least in the writings of Srila Prabhupada, Swarup generally refers to the constitutional form of the living entity, and Swabhav refers to the nature that comes out by infection with the modes of material nature, as you pointed out.
But it has a spiritual connotation.
And so you brought out today that the Swabhav Siddhi is what actually is the perfection of that nature, and therefore that is the nature of the true form or the original form of the living entity. So is my understanding correct that ultimately there is no difference between Swabhav and Swarup if we use it in absolute terms?
Yeah, the terms are different because they refer to something different, but they're of the same spiritual nature, yes.
Okay. Second question is coming from the morning class. I saw in your presentation, although you did not refer to it necessarily, those words, but I saw them in the context of effort and mercy. I saw the Swanishtha and then there was Bhakti Nishtha.
Yes.
These are the two. Like on the living entity's part, there should be Bhakti, and on the Supreme Lord's part, the Swanishtha, which means the steadiness of the Lord to give mercy. Is that the understanding?
Yes.
Okay.
It's just a technical Sanskrit way of saying the same thing. Effort and mercy.
Okay. So is my understanding correct that the Swanishtha means
yes.
the...
Yes, the... You're asking the same question. It's the same answer.
Okay. Third question is, when we talk about understanding the transcendental nature of Krishna's birth and activities, is transcendental tantamount to inconceivable? Or...
Well, this is a language question. That which is transcendental is inconceivable. That which is inconceivable is transcendental.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's language. That, you know, this word is not equal to that word because they have different connotations.
So behind this question, what I'm trying to understand is...
I'm trying to understand what's behind your question.
In order to reach the position that we can understand Krishna's transcendental nature of birth and activities, is that we thoroughly understand that he is inconceivable. And no matter...
You can say thoroughly understand, and I'll say it's fundamental.
Okay, let me ask in this way, that when would be the point where we can say that, okay, now we understand the transcendental nature of Krishna's form and activities? or Krishna's birth and activities? Because it's always going to remain inconsistent.
The answer to that, the answer is, we're tiny, so we can't. 7.1 Bhagavad Gita.
Mm-hmm.
To know Krishna in truth, in full.
Without doubt.
Without doubt. In full, that's an emphasis. Samagram.
Okay.
In full. So going back to your question, when is that in full? The tiny cannot know the unlimited.
Right.
In full, but Krishna is saying in full. So to our capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And then capacity can increase. Even our capacity is reached.
Mm-hmm.
The capacity can increase.
But it looks like a moving target, like in order to come to the point. So then when would the living entity qualify to go back to Godhead? It looks like if it's a moving target, then you can never settle on a point where one can say
that's
now you understand.
Material. That's right, it's not material. He has no inside and outside.
So
no
then,
interior, no extra. It's what we've been discussing.
So then the living entity can never satisfy that condition.
That's not true. It's dynamic. To say it's dynamic doesn't mean that you haven't met the condition.
Mm-hmm.
It's ever increasing. Doesn't mean you haven't met the condition. The condition is that, you know, this is where we spent this time. Remember, I'm sure you remember because you're a detailed person. Anukulya. Anukulyena Krishnanushilanam, the definition of bhakti. We commonly speak of anukulya, like anukulyasya sankalpa. Anukulya means accepting that which is favorable. Correct? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur goes through this little exercise that says, even when Chandra and Mushtika were wanting to dismember Krishna and Balaram, Krishna was enjoying it. He was deriving pleasure. So we can't say that's bhakti. And when Mother Jashoda went to the stove to get the milk from boiling over, Krishna became angry. So we're not going to say she had no bhakti because it was displeasing to Krishna. So we need some other criterion. The criterion, which is your question, where there's no motivation that's opposed to Krishna or in opposition to Krishna. You can say favorable or pleasing to, but it's the intention behind keeps the moving target being refined to the target. The intention of pleasing Krishna is also dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
But where there isn't some alternative intention.
So understanding this point that Krishna's, the knowledge about Krishna is always going to be inconceivable, would it be a proper attitude on the part of a practicing devotee that given that we will never be able to come to a position of truly understanding Krishna?
No.
In full?
No. That wouldn't be right.
Okay.
You can understand Krishna in truth. And that truth by which, that you know, it's not a box, because the box is going to expand.
Mm-hmm. That's why I'm saying in full, not in truth. But we'll never be able to understand Krishna in full.
Well, you can understand that. You can look at it either way. I'll argue the other way.
Okay.
You can look at it that way. You can never know Krishna completely because mm-hmm. we're tiny.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole of mm-hmm. bhakti is dynamic, not static.
Mm-hmm.
The other is, you can know Krishna in full because Krishna says he's not lying.
Mm-hmm.
And but that fullness can increase.
Mm-hmm.
By Krishna's mercy. And even that fullness that has increased and is ever increasing by Krishna's arrangement, it can shrink and appear to be forgetful, like Arjuna.
Mm.
Or like Marsh Prikshet or something.
Mm. So would it be a proper attitude on the part of the practicing devotee to just think about, I just need to increase my attachment towards Krishna?
And tamana partha.
And
partha.
And let me therefore focus on the kripa aspect, or because that is the most important quality of Krishna.
You asked the same question a different way a couple of classes ago, and I didn't appreciate the question. I mean, I didn't agree with the premise, I'd say it that way.
Mm-hmm.
If you focus on kripa, then you're going to be doing something. So you're not. It's a.
Yes.
The notion is semantical. If you focus on I want mercy, you're going to do something. Mm-hmm. So, if that answers your question, then fantastic.
Yes.
You have to do something to make yourself eligible. That's that's exactly what where we ended up.
Yes.
Swabhava Siddha from the devotees.
Yes. So I accept that point, and I'm actually just adding another dimension to it, that stop trying to understand Krishna, but rather we focus on just receiving mercy from Krishna by acting in such a way that...
I'm not comfortable with that
okay.
description either, because inquisitiveness is important.
Okay.
Wanting to know.
Okay.
Knowing that I don't know and wanting to know is important. Okay. Not in the material sense of, you know, I have a bigger information basket over here now.
Okay.
But knowing, in a different way, knowing from the heart. Yeah, it's like chanting. Mm. Not mastering chanting, give up mastering chanting, I'll just chant with the idea of, you know, just waiting for Krishna's mercy to descend through the holy name. We're making some effort to make that connection.
Mm-hmm.
And the mercy, not de-emphasize one and overemphasize the other, either way.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
This is about the point of the demigods.
Demigod?
Yeah, about Krishna controlling them.
Okay.
Kind of related to weather, too.
Weather,
like rain. And, yeah,
like
stuff
rain.
Like
okay.
So my question is...
Why? Go ahead, it's okay, you can say why.
Natural disaster. Why does Krishna make natural disasters? Because he's empowering them through the demigods. But why does he create natural disaster? What is the cause for it?
There's multiple causes. in one word, it's the deserve or karma of living entities that do bad things.
But why do we get the karma of that?
Why?
Why do we get the karma of other
because
people?
Because we make foolish choices.
She's asking, why do we get the karma of other people?
Oh, it's not other people. You're part of the other people. It's not other people. Pointing the finger at other people. don't twist the cord like that. It'll weaken the cable. Second question.
I don't have a second question.
Oh, you more on the same first one? You want to say it a different way? Same question in a different way? You think about it.
I think she has asked me, like, somebody was eating animals in China. I think that's what her context is, that somebody were eating animals in China and then the COVID started and we are suffering because of that. Is that true? She has expressed that. So that's why she's saying other people's choices are affecting us.
It's true. Other people's choices are affecting us. There's individual karma and there's group karma. And especially the way the world is today, the globalization of everything is, I mean, like right now, there's people, I'm pointing at the camera, but the camera's not working. There are people that are in China hearing our class right now. And there are people all over the place. So that's technology, but the impact of somebody doing something in China, eating something, having a global impact on other people that didn't eat that something, we're the trigger is over here, but the impact is all over the place because of the sinful activities of all over the place. Now, it's not that anybody and everybody that gets a disease, this particular COVID-19, means, aha, sinful. That's not the meaning. So there's other causes besides just the karmic cause. There's other principles involved, and that is the principle to teach us that this is the place of suffering. And that the way that the suffering comes, there are different kleshas, adhyatmika, adhibhautika, adhidaivika kleshas. Now, the question that you're asking has a lot to do with the question the people ask, little children. Why do bad things happen? Because little children didn't do bad things yet, but they did bad things in their previous life. So here comes a cyclone, or here comes a tornado, or here comes a something, the fires in California, and this and that. They're natural disasters that go on since creation. There's natural disasters. And the implication of those that didn't participate in the trigger that caused the natural disaster, they're being impacted. So innocent people are being, from some remote cause, are being impacted, which is apparently what your question is. But the cause and effect doesn't have to be so direct. It can be remote. And to provide persons with either of these, the reactions to karma or the lesson, this material world is not a place to hang out. It's a place of misery. We shouldn't just try to make the place of misery comfortable and think that's progress. That's a mistake. And so misery comes regardless. More?
Yeah, it's an additional question, but it's more related to devotees. So, in this coronavirus, why is Krishna taking away devotees? Because devotees are the ones who elevate us. For example, Bhakti Jara Maharaj, he's not an ordinary person.
Krishna may want that devotee to go to serve him in some other place, in some other way. And some devotee may be not careful when they should be careful, and they're not exempt from laws of nature. That's another lesson. Be careful, even your devotee. Be very careful. Take precaution when you should take precaution. Wear your seatbelt when you should wear your seatbelt, etc., etc. We take precautions. And we don't take precautions. And Krishna's not, he or she is my devotee, so I don't have to protect them. Or they don't have to wear a seatbelt. They don't have to take precaution. We take precaution.
Thank you.
Right. Prabhupada told the story. I didn't hear it. I heard from someone that heard it. Prabhupada said something, you know, he had a friend who was a business person, and the business person kept emphasizing his trust in his employees. And so he was one time taking Prabhupada through his place, of his factory or whatever it was, and he saw there was locks and everything. And so Prabhupada asked him, "You thought you said you trust everybody, but you have locks and everything." And the answer was, "Yes, because I have locks and everything. I trust them. I don't want to tempt them by not keeping locks on things, even though I trust them." Oh. We take precaution. Prabhupada was very cautious and. Tamahar. You know who Tamahar is? Prabhupada disciple. Lived for some time, two, 3 years with his family in Potomac Temple. Prabhupada was visiting there. During the centennial year, 1976. He visited, yeah. The 4th of July. So, Prabhupada was going out for a morning walk, and he noticed on the lamp pole there was a box, and he saw there was a little red light flashing, and Prabhupada pointed with his cane and said, "What's that?" They said, "It's a transformer, Prabhupada. It's electricity is coming from outside, and it's distributing electricity." And he said, "You better find out what that flashing red light is." And they were really busy, so they didn't. And then 2 or 3 weeks later, there was electricity went out because the transformer, it was a signal that it needs some attention, and they didn't pay attention. But Prabhupada was just visiting for a couple of days, and he noticed. He didn't know what it meant, but it's signaling something. So you take precaution, even we're devotees. Okay. You got anything?
Yeah. Thank you. Maharaj, I'm very enthusiastic in hearing about, Lord Krishna's potencies, how he expands himself, and I'm always fascinated hearing that. You mentioned about Lord Krishna and Arjuna going into different universes. I've read the Mahabharata, but maybe I forgot, or maybe I missed that part. But what was the circumstances where Lord Krishna and Arjuna go into different universes?
Okay, you've heard this before. I'll just now I remember. Okay, one of those. Krishna's pastimes, the Bhoma Lila, are eternally going on. Like the rising of the sun, somewhere is 24 hours the sun is rising, and 24 hours the sun is setting. The sun doesn't rise and set, it's just relative from our position on the planet Earth as the sun rises and sets. Similarly, Krishna's pastimes, as they're completed here, they're going on in some universe. Say it this way. As Krishna's birth pastime in this universe is just about to happen, in another universe it's going to happen. And then it happens in that universe, and in another universe it's just going to happen. Like the rising of the sun. So, Krishna can be continuing it after his birth pastime here, he continues all of his other pastimes here. And here he is doing his pastimes for 125 years. And then he's doing those pastimes in another universe and doing those pastimes. But he's not alone. He's with his associates, like Arjuna. So, take any one of the pastimes. They're in the forest. And then over there, they're in the forest, and over there in the forest, and over there in the forest. The Kurukshetra battle, the Kurukshetra battle, the Kurukshetra battle. So how many Arjunas are there? There's one Arjuna, but multiply expanded. Because the pastimes are going on in every universe. Once in a day of Brahma. In every universe. In every universe. And how many universes? Too many to count. So his Bhoma Leela are eternally going on. And his associates with him in his Bhoma Leela, like the Pandavas, they're eternally with Krishna. So they're expanded diversely, multiply. Quite amazing. Like, you know, they're very explicit because it's right there in the Bhagavatam, pointed out by your acharyas, that Devaki was personally present at each one of the 16,100 marriages that went on at the same time. It wasn't one big wedding in a big wedding hall. There was 16,100 weddings. And Devaki was there with each one. Simultaneously. That's an example. We'll hear more about it tomorrow. Swabhav Siddhi. The mind starts to either explode or expand, at least, to accommodate experiences beyond ours. That's what transcendental means. It's beyond our little, you know, instruments or senses in our mind to understand and grasp. Anything? No?
Hare Krishna Maharaji, I have a question. If on the deathbed one would remember the name of Guru instead of Krishna, the soul will go to the Vaikuntha or not?
Yes. That question was asked of Prabhupada specifically. Because you can't think of Krishna and Guru separately. I mean, if you think of Krishna and Guru separately, you've got a misconception going on. They're not separate.
Okay. And my second question is, what is the difference between Guru Tattva and Krishna Tattva?
Oh, that's a big topic. There's details and there's principles, so just stick with principle. Guru means one who is empowered by Krishna to deliver Krishna. One who is an instrument by which Krishna gives himself to others. That's guru function. So the function is different than the entity that's being delivered, but because of the purpose or function, the purpose of a guru's serving Krishna is qualitatively the same, therefore there's a oneness, although it's not a quantitative oneness. We have something out here?
Thank you.
We gave them a chance. Okay, Radha last. It's online, are there questions? No. Yeah, they're frustrated. Really? Okay.
They're not turning. Oh, yeah, there.
Okay, go ahead.
asked this question before, but
here we go again.
It's a really complicated question. Why doesn't Krishna just want to just make us go back to Godhead? Because he wants us to go back to Godhead.
Because there's free will, and he doesn't interfere with it.
But why? But he can change our mind, right? He has full control over us.
He doesn't do that. He encourages, but he doesn't. That's not the kind of controller that Krishna is.
But if we want him to, then will he?
Well, anything he wants to do, he can do, but he doesn't want to.
Well then, I thought that Krishna wants us to go back to Godhead.
Yeah, that's his desire. But he doesn't interfere with your free will. That's also his desire.
Okay.
Nice try. Okay, I think we're going to end.
Just one clarification question.
Sure.
So, you referred to Devaki's expanding.
We'll hear about it tomorrow morning.
So I'm hoping that all the other related personalities, they are also expanding. So Devaki is just one of the examples. Is that correct?
In principle, it's all possible. Exactly who is present everywhere doesn't say.
Oh, okay.
In principle, the same possibility applies to all.
Mm-hmm.
As the grain of rice, so the whole pot.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much.
Anything further from you? Or we're done. Okay, we're done. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Jai.
Jai.